Hi, everyone. My name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway,
a podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
Prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. And the other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
One last thing before we start the show. This episode was recorded right before the coronavirus infiltrated all of our lives, which is why it sounds like there's no crisis outside. That's because it was just a normal, nice day at the time. Anyway, here we go. All right, so we are here with Asaf Rodeh, and Jake is in Los Angeles, in West Hollywood, I believe, with Asaf. And if you don't know Asaf, he's a badass. He's on our website. He's been busy. He's a great guitarist, but he's also been music director for Ariana Grande. Right now, he's MD for Lil Nas X. Is that right?
Yep.
Cool. Charlie Puth, Jason Derulo, the list goes on. And, I used to play with Asaf a lot when I was in LA. We would eat falafel and other vegetarian delights. And yeah. I miss this guy. I haven't seen him in a while. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. It's funny that we need to do this so we can finally catch up. But that's what we've got to happen. I'm happy to.
It's not as easy as it used to be, right? You could just roll down to Silver Lake and we could get some coffee, but now it's harder.
Yeah, that was good times, man.
So Asaf did this thing for mymusicmasterclass.com about moving to town. And this was a really cool video. We did it years ago, and it was about coming into LA and not just networking, but the challenges of networking and being from another country, because Asaf's from Israel. And basically, there's a lot in that, you know. Asaf talks about making sure that you have your visa straight, making sure you don't do things the wrong way, and plus getting gigs and talking to everyone and not being shy to take any gig in the beginning and get your name out there and do the best job you can. Also, he talked about being indispensable and all these things. And, you know, it's been a while since we made that video, and I kind of want to start from the beginning and see, because I know your career has taken off quite a bit since then. And let's start with your advice now to musicians that just want gigs.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, it's funny because we made that video a few years ago, but everything you just said, I mean, oh, that all makes sense. I mean, and now, especially seeing now when I'm more on the hiring side as a music director, seeing like how those things really matter. And it's kind of messed up because, you know, you mentioned the whole like coming from a different country. I'll start with that, you know, keeping everything legit. I mean, now when I'm hiring musicians, because I used to be, the first few years, it took me longer than other people to, you know, to start doing cooler stuff at the beginning. And I feel like a lot of it is like, you know, you have to understand, at least for me, I'm from a different country. I have a different name. All these things where at the beginning I was like, yeah, well, it's not my problem. I'm great and I should be recognized. But now I understand if I have two people and one is from a different country and the other one is, you know, American, and like, you know, there's a lot of things that when somebody hires you, a lot of questions that they want to ask, like, okay, what's your visa status? Do you have a girlfriend back home? How long are you going to be staying here? You know, all these questions that sometimes you have the musician would have answers for, but that might change in a couple of years. So if you get somebody who lives here, who has a family here, I definitely, you know, see those things every day, and see how important it is to not only do everything you know, legit and be on top of your game. Also, you have to be better than anyone else and understand that it might even take you longer in a lot of cases for people that are foreign.
Yeah. Basically just like extra steps, man, that you don't need to take as an MD.
Yeah.
I remember when we were doing a gig together, we were doing this country gig. And at one point you were worried that the band leader wanted to go to a country where they maybe didn't want an Israeli passport or something like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, but I definitely lost gigs for that reason, which I mean, it's unfortunate. I've been on a couple of tours that with an Israeli passport, you can go to Malaysia, for example, and a couple other places, but you know, tours that were routed, you know, I definitely lost some tours in Asia because of that reason. And, you know, I was bitter about it at the time, but I totally get it. And I had some, when I was touring with Charlie Puth, we were touring in Asia. I think it was a promo run. So, you know, just did like guitar stuff with him. And we had to go to Malaysia. And I was like, listen, I know that I can't go. I just want to tell you. And like, of course, there's like some promoter who's like, yeah, you'll be fine. I'm like, I don't know.
Not something you want to chance.
Get in trouble with the Israeli government and be locked up in some, you know, country. It's definitely tricky. I mean, that's another thing. And it took me a long time, but I feel like, you know, being from a different country and like having a different name, I don't know if there are a lot of Asafs in the MD, you know, business in LA. So I definitely, you know, if my name comes up, it's like, oh yeah, of course, you know, that guy, which is, I'm happy about it. But it definitely, you know, looking back, I should have like come up with some slick, you know, slick name, nickname
like
or something. Yeah, exactly. might not be a bad idea to start.
Beyonce?
Yeah. You know. I mean, I still have people that I work with and they can't pronounce my name.
Come on, man. It's not that hard.
I know.
I mean, I remember back in the day also that you had this pretty great story and it was kind of the perfect example of getting your start in the city. And you were saying that you were answering Craigslist ads and just trying to get gigs and doing everything that you had to do. And there was one of the band leaders, a Russian tank driver, and you literally got the gig because you drove a tank in the Israeli army. How was that?
No,
started?
That's funny. Yeah, I remember that. It was the Red Elvises. You know, I played my ass off at the audition. It's like, yeah, you're great, but what did you do in the Israeli military? Because I told him that I'm from Israel. And it's like, I was a tank driver. Great, you can drive the van. You're hired.
That's awesome.
I was like, oh, fuck, I probably shouldn't have said that. But, yeah, I mean, I love, there's like stories like that. I mean, the story of like, I got one of the first like legitimate gigs that I got was with David Archuleta from American Idol. I just thought I remember the story because I thought that that's the story you're going to reference. But I it's just the randomness of how you actually get your shot. You know, somebody's got to get fired or something like that. And like I that gig was funny because I went to a Barry Squire audition and I met this guy who I later became friends with. But I was, you know, we just played at the same time. It was some crappy audition and everybody was terrible. But this guy was like a great drummer. And I was like, yeah, we should keep in touch. And I gave him my number, and then like I think like 4 months later I get a text from the guy and he's like, yo, I'm helping this artist to, you know, hire a band. And like I sent him five guitar players and they didn't like him, and you're the next one that I know because I don't know anybody else in this town. I'm like, cool. And I went down there, and the funny thing, I had a video of me on YouTube playing some solo. I don't remember what it was, but it was like transcribed from something. And it said in the description of the video, it was very clear. Like I said who played the original solo and everything. It's a pretty known solo.
Yeah.
And like whoever called me for the gig and I got, ended up getting the gig, he was like, man, that solo is, that's the reason you're here. You're the no choice and like the phrasing. And like, I'm like, wow, thank you so much. And like, man, I would never, you know, it's like some insane
that
shit.
That dude's going to hear that song one day.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Call you out randomly.
Yeah, I know. You know, and then you get hired and on the gig, you play power chords and like maybe a solo, you know, blues solo.
Of course you do.
Yeah, and you never, you know, yeah, that's a funny, the whole, Jake and I were talking about it before, but you know, to when you get hired for a gig, you come to an audition, and usually the flashier you are, people would think that you're better at music. And then, like, actually, even like, especially today, like, you don't get to, maybe like drummers get to do a little bit more. It depends on the gig, but like, it's not like you actually get to solo. Maybe you'll have like 2 seconds of something, but like, the things that really matter on, you know, musically and as far as how you are as a, you know, just hang wise, it's really hard to tell. And like, when you're auditioning somebody, and it's definitely the people, usually the people that are really great, you won't even like notice it in like a, you know, 15-minute audition of like playing a song, you know?
I mean, at this point, how much are you auditioning people when you're MD versus people you know and you bring in? Do the artists and the label still want you to audition?
I always tend to not have auditions because, first of all, it's a waste of time and a waste of money. And usually doesn't really happen because if you know a great musician and people trust you as an MD and hire you, they would, I mean, a lot of label, they don't want to spend that money anyway.
Right.
So, but in some cases, you know, people want, it's almost like an experience that the artist or like management or whoever, like they want to, you know, it makes it feel like it's more, the people you chose are like more special.
Yeah. Like you chose them.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, there's like, I definitely send options, you know, to management, and then they go, it's like, I pick people that I know are cool, and you kind of also kind of are able to, you know, kind of dictate whoever, you know, you send a few guys, like this guy is the best of all the guys that I send. And the, you know, when you put the order of the list in a certain way and send certain, you know, it's, there's a way to control it still.
I have a question with that. Like, say you kind of were going down the whole list and a lot of them were just out, like a lot of the normal cats that you would get. If it's someone you've heard of through one of them, but you don't have like much stuff and you actually have to research and find stuff on them, what do you like seeing? Like, do you like YouTube short clips or do you like seeing them playing like live with like camera audio or?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you come across?
That's a good question. I mean, honestly, I barely hire people that I don't know personally or don't have somebody that I really trust recommend them. Because first of all, even on the like hang level, you can hire somebody who's like incredible. You look him up. First of all, you can never tell with like videos today if it's like a million takes and it's edited. And like, and also the things that actually matter on a gig to me are not like if you can play fast and like, you know, whatever, shred and like,
you can't really showcase that stuff on like a video.
It's like, are you musical? Will you be able to come up with a different part really quickly? Will you be able to play the song in a different key in 2 seconds? And are you not insane? You know what I mean? Which are things.
Are you a pain in the ass on the bus?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Adam, we both know like, you know, mutual cats that are like solid players.
Yeah, they're insufferable.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they'll kind of get hired to do stuff because they're good, and but then, you know, that after like if they're lucky, they'll last for like a year or two, but then it's done.
Once you get a bad rep, it's hard to reverse that.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I'm very sensitive with the, I mean, I think especially today with social media, that's an interesting thing to talk about. But you know, people have their fucking Instagram on, you know, they'll do a live Instagram thing at a rehearsal of an artist that has never played a show before, and they'll, you know, they'll put it on there, or even like, you know, you go to the airport and somebody's gonna have their phone out and what's going on, and like do like a thing, you know, people are trying to promote themselves. And a lot of, I mean, I think it's inappropriate. I think that it's a problem because, you know, people are trying to promote themselves, but at the same time, when you're a hired gun on a gig, you gotta know your place, you know? And that's what, especially with social media, it's really, I'm very sensitive to that.
It's a big difference. You're not the artist.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I understand it, you know, I mean, I feel weird about posting some stuff sometimes because it's like, I mean, I'll take Lil Nas X, for example, who I actually started working with him before we even had a manager. So it was, I got an email from Columbia Records saying, you know, hip hop, country artist, and you know, the subject line. I was like, I wonder what that is. And like, you know, 5 minutes later, it was the biggest song in the world. And like, everybody knew who he was, but it was like kind of, but with him, it's like kind of, I mean, people hit me up and like, oh man, congratulations on the Grammy nomination. I'm like, no, I didn't. I just do the live stuff. You're a part of a project for a long time, and we're working very closely. And like, I'm, you know, they're all my friends, and then you post something about congratulations to everybody involved. The next thing you know, people associate you, and it's a normal thing. But I mean, I feel like a lot of people kind of
take advantage of that. Yeah, you know, it can be misleading. Completely.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't want to say that you've done something that you haven't either. You want to be honest.
Yeah. That's another.
You don't want to like outshine or pretend that you're outshining the artist, because that just gets back to the people that make decisions and they're like, this guy's jive. You know, he's not.
Yeah.
He's not playing the game, and he's taking credit for stuff we did. And we don't want someone like that in our camp.
You know, a lot of people are trying to tour, right? And I mean, you know this, and you know, it's something that certain people are like, can like know their place in a situation. And also when you're touring, you're playing a show that's maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours, depends, sometimes mm-hmm. even like 15 minutes. And sometimes you're just like playing some radio station, playing one song on a radio station. And then you, the rest of the time you're hanging out. You know, so that's more important than how good as a musician you are. Is, you know, it's pretty funny, but that's the truth.
Yeah, I mean, the show should be locked in. Like, whatever, locked in by the time you're in a bus, you know?
Yeah, it's like also how you deal with the entire thing, because, I mean, Pete, and you know this, I mean, this is something you could even branch out on, but if you're really on tour, you know, when people really go on tour, it's grueling. And if you're able not just to make the hang in the bus and in the plane, but also be completely sleep deprived, do 6 a.m. checkouts, get in another bus, drive, do a 3 p.m. sound check and stay there until the gig at like 9 o'clock or whatever it is. I mean, I'm not saying it's not cool. It's the lifestyle we've chosen, but it is difficult. And if you're with the person that is easily frazzled, that's not at peace with that, they can implode.
No, 100%. I mean, we've all seen it happen, because it's hard to tell how a person is going to be in that situation. And also, you know, especially when you're on a bus with, you know, 11 other dudes or whatever, it's a whole talent that people don't really think about. The funny thing that I'm seeing is like, I even like look at myself, like I moved to the US wanting to tour basically. And I was like, yeah, I want to get on a big tour and, you know, be on a tour bus and play in front of a lot of people, all that stuff that is, you know, great. But then once you start doing it, you realize, well, what does this lifestyle actually mean? And like, you know, I just, my wife and I had a kid almost 2 years ago. And once we decided to go for it, it's like, oh, well, I guess I spent, you know, 10 years doing something that if I want to be around, I probably shouldn't have, you know what I mean? If I thought this through from the beginning. And I know a lot of people, you know, You can do both, but for me it was like, I'm gonna get to the point where I spend all this time in something, and you have to figure out a plan B at some point, even if you're doing really well, you know.
So how do you manage the time now that you have a kid, or how is that different than before?
I've been doing the MD stuff for a long time, but I also have been playing, and I love playing, and I love touring. And the one thing about having a kid for me is like, well, I can't take any job, especially if I know that I can, maybe something better is going to come along, and staying home, which is always better, you know, when you have a kid is like even more important, you know, you're like,
yeah
I'd rather stay home and wait and like work on some music here and like, you know, hit some people up. And then when the opportunity comes, it's like, well, it wouldn't make sense for me to leave on this tour for whatever amount of money. And, you know, those numbers, that's one, another thing that, you know, I'm going to be 40 in a few months, which is, you know, like we said in LA years, it's
almost, 90.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much talent out here, and every year there's like new musicians that come into town, and there's not like, there's more money in the business, you know? So it's like, you're competing with like really young cats that are usually great, and you know, they would do it for, you know, they don't have to pay for the things that we have to pay. I mean, I know I sound like I remember when I used to hear people talk like that, I'm like, yeah, they're losers, when I was like younger. But I mean, it's just the way it is.
That's just logical.
Yeah.
Everything
yeah.
you're saying.
But you I mean, know? That I think that goes back to what we talked about on the video we did. It's being able to do more is the most important thing you can do. I think.
You mean making yourself indispensable?
Yeah, exactly. And also, I mean, it depends on what you're doing exactly. You know, if some situations, especially if you're hired to do one thing, then like being like, yeah, I'm also an MD and I'm a producer and I do this. It's not always like you got to know where to, you know.
You mean you want to know what your lane is. You don't want to just
keep talking. Yeah, right. Exactly. In general, I mean, I always felt, I mean, you see it a lot, especially how like things are changing today. Like if you're a bass player and you can't play a key bass, then you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
If you can sing background vocals, which not a lot of people can these days, surprisingly.
I know, but it's so important.
Yeah, so important. And you know, all these, if you can play acoustic, I mean, I'm a guitar player. So if you can play acoustic guitar, it's major because a lot of, you'll do promo
and
stuff.
It's funny that you say that because when I was just checking your site out today, all the coolest YouTube clips you have up there of you playing all the shows and the talk shows and blah blah blah. You're on acoustic for every single one of them.
Yeah, I don't even know how. I always liked playing acoustic guitar. I thought that everybody, every professional guitar player should at least know how to play an acoustic guitar. And I was really surprised after I moved out here and I found out that that's not the case. I mean, especially
a lot of people can't play rhythm at all. They can't, can't play acoustic.
I love it because it's almost like a percussion instrument to me.
Yeah. I think I love it more than playing. And I mean, when it's a big, it's a good band and it's like, it's always more exciting, but I feel like, I'm always happy to get those calls because, you learn the song and you kind of have to learn, especially in pop, there's no guitar on the actual record. And like, okay, let me see what I can do with one instrument to make this exciting and kind of,
Right.
Which
to make it feel right.
Yeah. To make it feel right. And there's also, maybe I can make the chords more interesting, but also know what the style is and understand, all that stuff. So, I love doing acoustic stuff, but I definitely feel, it's really hard to find people that can actually do that stuff. You know what I mean?
It's funding too. Like there's going to be more acoustic stuff than there are like full bands.
Yeah.
Tracks.
The funny,
stuff.
The funny thing is it's not the first time I've heard that, remember Tony Bruno, he was the music director for Rihanna and Enrique Iglesias stuff. So he was talking about it. We did a video with him in the very beginning of My Music Masterclass. And one of the things he talks about is, and I don't know if he, I think he talks about it on the video, but he definitely told me that it was really hard to find young guitarists that could play rhythm because his theory was that, and I know that you went through this too, because in Israel, this kind of happens, but in his theory was that he played in bar bands when he grew up, he played all kinds of tunes, everything. And he said that a lot of these younger players are just playing the music that they want to play. Or just originals, and they never get the experience of playing rhythm behind songs that, maybe they wouldn't have chosen just to get that experience. That's an interesting theory. I mean, but the truth is that there really aren't a lot of people that can play convincing, solid acoustic and make it feel full.
I feel like it's a different instrument, not to mention, finger picking, knowing that the voicings are different. There's so much that we definitely talked about that in the video. You can tune down or maybe tune one string down and have like open tuning type stuff. You can have a cape on. There's so many creative things that you can do that like are important to be able, especially when I get called for like sessions, it's like,
it's also not bad for writing too.
Yeah, no,
I mean, you 100%. Sit with an artist, you've got an acoustic guitar. I mean, the world is right there. It's nice for them.
Yeah.
So let's break this down into something like that makes sense for people listening. So you're saying that as a bassist, it would be indispensable for you to play key bass and electric, maybe even upright, and definitely sing, right?
Well, that's, you just described the perfect bassist. Which, I mean, you'd be surprised how, with every, you filter, we're looking something on some website, and you add some more filters to the thing. You just described the more things you added, like the less people that can actually do it. I mean,
that's like one dude. Yeah.
Yeah. If you can do all those things, hit me up.
Well, even exactly. With that bass that you play, Adam, that little like blue crazy looking Asbury thing. Yeah. That I mean, thing's awesome.
I feel like, I mean, you're a good example, Adam, because you're from a, you know, I feel like it's from a time where you actually had to know how to do all these things and like, oh, you want me to, you know, let's play it in a different key and you can just like count off and like start and it's already there. And that's not something that's needed today as much, but I think it's very important, especially with the more, with the, you know, if you're working with a really musical artist, it's a necessity. When I was working with Charlie Puth, which he's like, you know, insane, perfect pitch and like, just like doesn't even like, he's so musical that he doesn't even understand how people are not on that level sometimes.
Right.
And we would go and like, I'm talking about like a live TV show and there's an acoustic performance and he would be like, when we're sitting on set and it's getting like live in like 2 seconds, you know, and he's like, let's do it in C. I'm like, what? Let's do it in C. And we've never played it in C. I have like parts. It's not even like strumming chords, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's like, okay, sure.
Yeah, you gotta
let's
be able
it.
To pull it off, man. Part of my whole New York upbringing was, as a bassist, was you never know what's going to happen on a gig and you never rehearse. So that was kind of where I came from. So before I got to LA, that was my life. You know, you get to a gig and people say, do you know this one? And you say, no, not really. And they say, okay, it starts on the three, the bridge is on a six, you know, and then, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, it's in C minor, but
fill in the rest.
2-5 to minor, and then this, and then, you know, whatever the case is. But you use musical, there's never note values. Like, they just tell you the key and then numbers.
Yeah.
And then you can figure it out because you have to know it by the numbers. You can't know it by the chords. Like, if you know Autumn Leaves by, like, whatever, C minor 7, F7, B flat major.
Yeah.
You're going about it all wrong if you're a jazz player, you know.
Like, oh, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, you have to know the function because that's all that matters. If you know the function, you know about 100 songs right there.
To be honest, it's not completely needed in a lot of situations. If you're hired to play bass on a pop gig, for example.
Oh, yeah. It's the same key every night.
Yeah, it's the same key. There's like tracks, probably like, you know, 808s on the playback or whatever. There's like, it's a different... You know, it's a different thing, but you're
unless
not
unless there's
be...
a sample rate mismatch just off, and then
exactly. Here you go. Here you go.
Someone's getting fired.
But you know what? For example, I mean, I know like some good, again, like going back to what I was saying before. If you know, Ableton, for example, or if you know, you know, and if I know, like for example, for the way I like to do it is, you know, I hire musicians and I send them. The stems that they need to learn, right? So if it's a bass player, I send them like, okay, this is what the 808 is doing. Either, you know, program a sound, which is another thing, like, you know, for bass, if you're able to do that, you know.
Yeah, you gotta be able to do some basic stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so you gotta know, you know, if you can program that sound, that's fine. If you know how to sample it and like load it onto, you know, and like bring whatever you need to bring. And, you know, the easier that you make my job with not having to do it and you're not spending the time on it, you show up and you know everything and you have everything samples, you have option, everything sampled and you have options of like different things that you could do. That's like very valuable. You know what I mean? Not just like, you know, again, we're talking about bass player, but like if the knowing like the tone and understanding it on a deeper level, you know, this is not a 5-string type of gig. You know what I mean? This is not,
right.
I know I love that low stuff, but it's just not what this needs, you know?
And maybe it needs a pick, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a little
exactly.
More driving.
Pick and like understanding.
Yeah. Or P bass, something else, something passive. You never know. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that should be fun for you.
Yeah.
As a bass player,
I feel like that's where it's at more than like, well, know the functions of, I mean, I feel like a lot of people know it, but I feel like, you know, ear training is a big thing for me. And I always was, you know, all about it. And I feel like I went back to Israel and did this like thing in the school that I went to, and it was like a sight reading class. And the teacher was like, so tell us for real, how necessary is it to be a work? And I'm like, I don't want to bum you guys out, but you know, but it's funny because I mean, it's just what I do. I know there's a lot of different gigs, and you know, if you're gonna be a session player, if you're gonna do work, I mean, if you're gonna do like film scoring and stuff like that, you know, in that world, you have to know, or like a TV show, you know, but on like pop gigs, you need to be able to do all these things. It's not about like reading, but I want you to know everything by heart show up to rehearsal with no charts.
Yeah.
You know, be able to, if I play a phrase or like sing something, you know, you'll be able to know it right away. It's like, you know, and also be musical enough to know, well, the keyboard player is doing this now. Maybe I shouldn't do this. You know what I mean? That,
right.
That's where it's actually, you know, on the world that I work in. And also, yeah, you know, have options of having a broader musical understanding of what's happening. I think that's
being musical.
Yeah.
Having big ears and being able to learn things really quickly and remember them. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally what kept me working. You know, I mean, being able to retain music and remember it. That's a really big one.
No, for sure.
And doing it quickly and at rehearsals, so when they make a change, remembering it and not just screwing it up 5 seconds later, or being smart enough to notate it somewhere, jot it down, and also having big ears so that, you know, when you're playing and the singer comes in the wrong place, you adjust, you know, or when, if someone's goes to a different part, or you're in a situation where someone is able to stretch and it's not a gig with tracks, hearing what they're doing and making it better, you know, and enhancing it, as opposed to just being blinded by, you know, what the music is, just being musical and keeping your ears open. I don't know. That was always what I did.
No, I mean, that's everything you described is what I wish everybody, you know, was able to do that. It reminded me, I did work with Skip Marley.
Oh, cool.
That was a interesting experience because he's Bob Marley's grandson, and he, first of all, he's really, really great. Like, it's and also they, you know, I got called to sub as the MD and guitarist for that, and we had a Coachella performance. So it's kind of a big show for him. And you know, the band was great. You know, reggae, for example. And I know that you know that, cuz I remember, you know, it's something like I was like, as a guitar player, and I feel like, I mean, I knew a lot of the music cuz it's surprisingly really popular in Israel. Like, reggae is a thing. There's a scene, and you know, there's,
of course, it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like I know. And I learned those parts, and I knew some of the parts, but like, as a guitar player, I'm like, I'm going to learn the record with all the, you know, what I would call mistakes, but it's like, that's, you know, and like the, it's like one of those things where like, you need to learn this part and understand where it comes from, and not just like, yeah, I know how to do this, and let me play with a different guitar, or maybe if I'll add like reverb, you know, shit like that like doesn't really fly, and it makes it sound like it's not, you know, it's not right for the
it's
the style.
It's not authentic, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember, I mean, it was a really great band, and we, his mom, who's, you know, she grew up around all this music and knows what it's supposed to sound like. It doesn't matter how amazing you are as a musician, you know, they walk in and there's like a bunch of, you know, family members and stuff, and they're like, yeah, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah, it's exactly. I was going to say, it's a feeling more than a sound.
This doesn't feel right. Something with the bass and drums. And they're like really, really great cats. And I was like, as an MD, I'm like, okay, let's see. I mean, let me try to understand this. And what the deeper that I, you know, went back and listened to it, it's something like, because, you know, you think of that music as like, I mean, you know, it's not Stevie Wonder, you know what I mean? Like, and
no, it's a simple art form, but that means sometimes that means it's more nuanced, you know?
Yeah, no, I meant like, you know, when you play a Stevie Wonder song and it's like happening, it's like, you know, there's certain things, the groove, I'm talking about like music that is like groove based, you know what I mean? I'm saying like, you would think that it's like the same thing, but it's so different as far as like how heavy it needs to be and like where to, you know, how laid back or not laid back. Some people think
feel
it needs to be really, it needs to be really laid back, but that's not really the case. You know what I mean?
It's, I like, feel like the hi-hat is like,
oh yeah,
it's hi-hat, like entire art form with a reggae drummer.
Yeah. And like, the bass, I mean, the bass is like,
the bass is very specific. Yeah.
Yeah. Just play that, understand what it needs to do, and don't do anything else. And like the note lengths. And I mean, I felt the same way with the guitar. I'm like, this is what it needs to be. And it's funny because Skip plays a little guitar. he has the wah, you know, the wah is engaged, but it's kind of like halfway through, through, and like he does a little bit of movement. I was like, well, that's really cool. You know, it's something that's like, okay, that's that sound. And, you know, he puts the pickup where it needs to be, and it's like play instruments in a certain way. It's just like, you know, those things are so, I mean, you know, you come to this game like, yeah, I've done, you know, I know my stuff. And then you're like, oh, okay, let me go back and do my homework, you know?
I feel like reggae is one of those styles of music that everyone thinks they know how to do and they don't take it seriously, and they just do this really lame impression of what the music sounds like to them. Like, and it's this thing where the bass just kind of, they play with their thumb and they mute, and then they play the same way they always play, and then they play triplets once in a while. and it's not the way that it's actually played. Like, first of all, the feel is completely different, and the bass is driving. The bass drives the drums almost in a way, even though it's laid back. Plus, like, there's not that many triplets.
I mean, and if the triplets are pretty straight, and if they're not there, they have no place. You know what I mean? If it's not,
right.
I feel like it's cool to see how the family, because I remember, you know, he has some original stuff, and it was like original. He's like a pop artist, but it's like pop reggae, and then like we did some didn't have a lot of original music that you're gonna play at the show, and we did some Bob Marley covers. That's how we, you know, got deeper into that, because, you know, the pop stuff is all like really produced, and it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a pop gig at the end of the day, but when we got into the reggae stuff, it's like, it's almost like jazz standards in a way. It's like, yeah, this is how the song is played, these are the parts. You know, you got to learn, you got to play them. It doesn't matter, like, no improvising, really. You know what I mean? Maybe you can.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's like just what it needs to be, what it needs to be, and it needs to do what it's supposed to do. When that happens, it's like magic. When you feel that, okay, now it's actually what it needs to be, then you're like, okay, now I get it. You know?
It's funny because we just did this podcast with Jay Deal, and he was talking about Eddie Brown. You know the keyboardist Eddie Brown?
Yeah, yeah.
He's great, you know, and one of the things he was saying, a great quote from Eddie, which completely pertains to this, when asked about, you know, playing a lot of different styles, is you just have to be authentic. And if you're authentic, it's believable. It's a funny word, but it's true. It's like, if you're not authentic and you're not really feeling something, and you really haven't done the research, and you're really not, you know, doing it justice, it doesn't sound authentic. You don't feel authentic, and you definitely don't look authentic, even if you're dressed the part, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you know, I know that you've done your research on all kinds of things. I mean, when we used to do country gigs together, it's not as if, you know, you grew up in West Virginia, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
But you checked the stuff out and you believed it, and you loved it. You know what I mean? There's a difference.
West Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, man. But I mean, that's actually a good example, because when I first got
what's wrong with West Virginia?
Nothing. That was just so random.
Yeah. No, but it's exactly right. I mean, you know, when I first got my first country gig, because I always played acoustic, and I kind of, for some reason, I mean, I was into like country guitar, which just, I mean, doesn't exist. There's no country music in Israel at all. And the only thing you hear on the radio is like, you know, Jolene.
Chosen country. They have chosen country there.
Yeah, here you go.
Chosen country music.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's, yeah, I'm into that.
That's pretty
hot. That's funny. Yeah, that's awesome. But yeah, I mean, and I went to audition for that country gig that we did, one of the gigs that we did together, and I kind of knew how to play mandolin, but I listened to the album and I'm like, yeah, I can play all this stuff. It's like, you know, not too technical, and like I can hear, you know, transcribe it all. And I show up to the gig and like to the audition, I'm like, wow, you're great. Did you play a lot of country music in Israel? I'm like, yeah, all the time. That's all I did. Just country. But you know, and you get comfortable, but then, you know, when we traveled and we went to places like, you know, Montana or whatever. Yeah. And then you play some bar gig and some kid shows up and like, oh, I see you play mandolin. Do you know any, like, do you know, and you start calling out like bluegrass tunes and like,
or like when we were in Nashville, we just like, we're bar hopping in Nashville, Asaf and I, and there was just one great guitarist doubling on pedal steel and another one, and then another one on dobro and on mandolin.
And they're doing like 10-part harmonies.
Exactly. So, you know, one of the biggest things for me, because working in Israel in music is you got to kind of know how to be able to do all these things, but it's not really like you can, you need to know, to be able to, you got to be great if you're going to work, because there's a lot of great musicians and not a lot of gigs. But at the same time, it's like you, like you were saying before, it's like when people play reggae and don't really know it, it's like, yeah, this is what this is supposed to sound like, especially from a different country. And like, you know, nowadays it's easier because it's easier to be exposed to things. But like, you know, people, I feel like in different countries, I mean, I grew up playing like, you know, rock music, like American music, basically. But my idea of it was completely different. Of all these styles when I moved here. And then you go to, you know, places where it's more than just, yeah, it's, you know, you learn the blues licks and you're a blues guitar player. Now you got to understand that, you know, it's deeper than that, and have, yeah, and sure, I think is. more than, cause you know, I grew up and I'm like, yeah, I can play blues, you know, let me move on and play Dream Theater. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I thought as a guitar player. It's right, like, let me play more advanced shit. And then you're like, wait, you know, I came back to all these things, transcribing like Stevie Ray Vaughan solos. And I'm like, wait, that bend is not, you know, it's not, it's, it starts a little sharper, you know what I mean? And it goes, it doesn't really go to the three, totally.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? All
and
these
also
things.
He like was that. Not thinking about any of that.
Yeah,
so it's
no.
Like,
of course.
No, I mean, he was just listening, you know. He was just listening to Albert King and stuff, you know?
Yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And understanding that, you know, understanding like, well, totally. this came from this and this came from this, and you go back and you understand kind of like, I think, I mean, I feel, because for the longest time after I moved here, I was like, yeah, I'm a rock guitar player. But then I went to some rock auditions and like saw some people play rock. I'm like, wait, I mean, I maybe not like one of these guys, you know what I mean? Even like, yeah, hang wise and like the things that they, you know, care about. And also almost in a way, I always felt like, well, I'm an overqualified rock guy, which, like, I don't know, you know, it doesn't put me in a jazz musician world still, but it's, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you have to understand that. I mean, I think learning styles was a, or at least understanding where styles come from and like respecting that is a big thing to me. And actually, I mean, it brings me, I've been doing a lot of, you know, urban music in the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just finished a show for this this new artist, Arizona Zervis, who's got a song that's been blowing up. And, you know, you see, and you know, Lil Nas X and a lot of those, like, yeah, urban, and in general, you see kids that are like, you know, 18, 19, 20, you know, they look at something from 3 years ago and like, oh, that old song. Like, dude, you know, what are you,
I know,
what are you
right?
talking about? You know, I still think that stuff from the 90s is like, yeah, that's, you know, it's a song that came, pretty right. new song that he came with, the recent song that he came out with, you know?
It's like, so it's Smells like Teen Spirit. That was like a couple years ago.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I just realized that when.
I never thought of that, actually. Like, yeah. I feel like history isn't really a thing in our minds.
If you're young, I mean, basically, like, Fall Out Boy is like old, is like is classic rock, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I overheard with some artists I work with, I overheard somebody came into rehearsal and they're like, yeah, man, I went to this bar and they played some like whack 70s music. It was like, oh, like Beatles and shit? And it was like, yeah. And I'm like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like, that's there. I believe that nothing really changes. I know we, like, older musicians tend to think like, yeah, it used to be amazing, but now everything is shit. And like,
not really.
And trying to be like, you know, seeing how these kids, like, I see, like, Lil Nas X is a great example, because he, you know, he's like, he doesn't really do things in the way that people, you know, the whole, like, yeah, A&R and label, and they, you know, try to do that. He's like, if he heard a beat on YouTube that is dope and wrote a song to it, it would just happen. It's not, I mean, you know, sometimes it'll be an MP3 and they'll go in the studio and record it, and then it'll be a smash. You know, the beat is, you know what I'm saying? Like, the idea that it needs to be something is no longer true. You know, like the idea of like, yeah, let me send a demo to a record company. You know, it's like,
right,
you can do so much stuff, you know, just, and I get like demos from people that do stuff on like free apps on like iPad, and it's awesome. Yeah. And what I was going to say about styles, you know, the whole, you know, urban thing is like, and again, the challenge I feel, and one of the things that I've been trying to do is like stay, like, understand like why kids like it, and like, oh, let me see what this is about, and like, and not be judgmental towards it, you know, a thing that older people or people our age tend to do. And like, let me see.
I think it's important.
Yeah, I feel like it's important, and especially like because I
you can't be crusty, you can't be like a grouchy old dude. You know, I mean, you got to embrace it because the fact is, the young people have an opinion and they're not wrong. You know what I mean? Like they're not wrong. It's just that in you have to find what's beautiful about it.
Yeah,
what's engaging,
and sometimes it can be challenging if you come from a certain world.
Sure,
but I mean I see hip hop, you know what I mean? Like, and like urban music, you see like, okay, you know, playing a lot of festivals, you're like, I guess it's, and you see like thousands of kids like all excited about it. I'm like, oh, let me see what this is about. And then you understand, well, the 808s, when they come in, they're supposed to hit in a certain way. And the hi-hat is supposed to, there's a certain groove to it. And there's a, you know, and the sample of like the snap sample matters, you know what I mean? And like, and you know, autotune needs to be, the retune speed needs to be in a certain place for that to sound like, you know, are you trying to be like Drake, or you know, if it's in all these things, that's the world that you know, Post Malone, there's like certain, you know, things that people are into, and that's a whole world of like detail, and you know, it's a legitimate thing. There's nothing. And you know, it's always fun. It's always the thing with bitter musicians are like always hating on pop, and especially like jazz musicians. Like, well, go write a pop song and make, you know, millions of dollars. And you know.
Well, yeah, it's not that easy, as you know. And yeah, secondly, secondly, if you want to keep doing what you're doing at 40, which is 90 in LA, of course.
Yeah.
You better stay, you know, abreast of what's happening in the scene.
100%. That's something that I really try to do. And I think, you know, musicians in their 30s, I want to say, and older, if you want to be relevant, first of all, you have to keep up. And not, some people hold on to like, well, I don't know what the whole Spotify thing is. And like, well, you know, go check it out. Or like, if you, you know, or you know, people that sing with autotune are like cheating. Yeah, but that's what kids are listening to these days. And it's not about you're able to sing and pitch. So, you know what I mean? Like your ability to sing, you know, in key, or like to have.
Well, where was that dude when Bob Dylan was singing?
Yeah, exactly.
why wasn't he upset about that?
You know what? So, with some artists, I mean, you know, a lot of there, some shows, especially in that world, that's a part of the sound. And like, I know when I walk into a rehearsal, I'm like, I can't believe I'm the guy who's convincing the artist to use autotune for this. I'm like, right. 16-year-old me is very ashamed, you know? But at the same time, I mean, that's what's happening today. If you want to be, you know, there's no reason to fight it. If you want to be a part of it, you might as well like understand it and like, and, you know, crush the technology angle of it. And like, let me see the best way to do it. And let me understand how this sounds. And it's a, you know, once you keep the judgment out of it, it's just a world of like learning. I know Ableton and, you know, Logic and Pro Tools and all that, and Digital Performer, because that's a lot of shows are run on Digital Performer, surprisingly. But, you know, FL Studios, which like a lot of, for many years, it was like, yeah, that's what people that don't know how to do stuff, that's what they use. But like today, a lot of the urban stuff is done in FL Studios. And I started like checking it out to be like, yeah, I probably should know this if I want to know. And I feel like that's another thing, you know, like going back to like guitar players or bass players, like, yeah, I don't know how to play key bass. Well, it'll take you like 3 weeks to learn. You know what I mean?
And it should be fun.
If you're a good musician, you could figure it out.
Yeah, and you probably should. I mean, the biggest thing, and I find a lot of people like, oh, I can't believe they're not using a bass player for this. Well, you're the idiot that decided to be a bass player. You know what I mean? Like, you can't blame anybody for the it's going away because, well, you can put it on the track and like you save money.
That could be good advice for everyone. You know, I mean, just to look around at what other musicians with their instrument are doing and figure out how they can incorporate it, right? So if you see bass players working in the scene, if you're in New York, LA, Nashville, or whatever, and you see that all of them play key bass, and maybe they double on upright, you probably have to compete with that. If you see all the guitarists can also play mandolin, and maybe ukulele,
double on keys,
or double on keys just enough, you know, just a little piano, maybe that's something you should shed, you know? If you see drummers that have electronics in their rig, maybe that's something you should look up, you know?
Yeah, everything you mentioned, like drummers should own a SPD pad and know how to run it. And that's, you know, if you're going to work in pop music, and probably most, even like rock gigs today, you got to know, I mean, we can go over like different instruments, and if you want me to, like, at least from my experience, I think is like necessary. So drummers, first of all, play to a click, you know different styles and understand what's needed for every gig. And I feel like in general, be able to, first of all, pocket is always, you know, most important thing, but to me at least. But I feel like creating excitement, even if you're not like a you know, big, you know, if you're not, if chops is not like your the things that you're really good at, then know how to be able to create that excitement, because that's what, like, that's always going to be necessary. I mean, like, if you need to play harder, or like, you know, learn
even just the physical movements.
Yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
get,
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
I saw a drummer the other night. He couldn't do like the, you would want those gospel fills and some of that stuff.
Yeah,
but he was playing to the tracks, and you could tell he made the tracks.
Yeah,
and dude, just the way he was playing it, I was into this band. I was like, I love this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So that's as far, I mean, you know, no styles and stuff, but buy an SPD pad. Just don't buy, you know, three, you know, a couple weeks of no drinking and you'll be able to afford a SPD pad, or buy a used one, you know, which I don't know how much costs, and like learn how to use it.
And you know, can't go to Intelligentsia very often either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just like, you know, a couple days without coffee and you'll be good. But, for drummers, so SPD pad, know how to use it, and usually, you know, show up with the samples all ready to go, and like know how to put them in the right order. You know, it's
have options.
Yeah, have
be
options.
Be able to add a reverb on one of them if you need.
Yeah,
to be.
Yeah, whatever you need. But
it's
like,
easy.
You know,
it's all in there.
Do the levels if needed, or like write down what, you know. It's not rocket science, but there is knowledge there. You know, for keyboard players, you know, play piano, organ, and you know how to do basic programming, or like, even if you're a keyboard player, you should probably be able to program every sound that you hear on the record, and actually do that, you know, spend the time learning that. There's ways to do it. There's like videos, you know, there's that. I think it's very important. And you know, sample if you need to sample some things. For bass player, I think we covered that, you know, key bass, and basically if you can play upright and you know, play with a pick, I think is very, and understand sound and what, you know, what's needed for every style. Guitar players, yeah, we haven't talked about, I mean, play acoustic guitar is a big thing. I feel like understanding tone and also understanding how things, what like translates in a live situation, is very important for shows. Like some parts you need to play an octave higher. Some parts are actually on the record and you need, you know, you maybe have him stay on the track, or like, you know, keep him on the track and play power chords on the chorus. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. Understanding how to create that excitement. Again, that's a big one for me. You know, the chorus, it might feel great on the record, but for a live show, it needs to be something different. So be ready with all the tones. And oh, a big one for guitar is, Kemper or fractal. That's something that's like, I'm like, I think that already like 80% of touring gigs use a you know, guitar emulator. It's not amps anymore. Yeah, it's crazy because I mean, I hated it.
I guess
at first.
It's easier for backline, right?
It's easier for everything. You know, if sound guys are, I know, right. You know, when you're doing a tour, then your sound guy hopefully will know that it's going to be in the same place every night, so he's not going to mess right. with your sound. And also, you know, going back to the amp and changing it on state, it doesn't happen. You play every night. Right. And I mean, the biggest one for
and
me
it's the
with
same
that,
in your ears too.
Yes, same in your ears every night, which is awesome. And also for me, the biggest thing about that is like, you're able to program the sounds when you're working on a show. You can have all the stems, and then you can like work on the music and kind of record it and like tweak it to where it's like, if you're trying to match the sound, like, you know exactly what going to sound like in the mix, which is huge. And you know, that's another thing with like, well, let go of what you think about playing with an amp, you know, vintage, whatever it is. Like, this is, you know, if it's not necessary, unless you're doing one of like a big rock gig that really. Yeah. Which again, some
I mean,
people
you're talking
always,
about a specific scene, but it's true. It's true yeah. within pop and R&B, or like, you know, a lot of different circles for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away with like a lot of like rock, like bigger rock acts. Like, do I worked on some stuff with Weezer last year,
all
and Rivers uses a Kemper for everything, and they're like, you know, very heavy tones. Yeah. I mean, totally. It's all, and it's like, and it sounds awesome. And it's like, yeah, great. You know how to, you spend the time programming it, you know, like really tweaking it. And like, that's, I mean, I think it's, it adds a lot, you know, and you know what you're going to get. You don't have to, you know, just easier.
If you've gotten to play Only in Dreams with them, I'm walking out of this room right now. I'm never talking to you again.
No, I didn't play with them. I just,
that's my jam. That was my high school. Yeah. I love that tune.
Man, I mean, yeah, they're great. That was a good time.
Man, I know that we have to cut this short us off because you have duties to attend to.
True.
And man, you know, if you liked what you heard, you know, definitely check more out of Asaf. And also, like we said, or like I said, we have some videos of Asaf teaching really cool stuff and just talking about networking. He also does some stuff with guitar, acoustic and electric, on my music masterclass. But for now, thanks so much, man. It's been great. And man, I miss you, man. It's been too long.
Me too, man. Thanks for having me. I mean, this is great. And check out the video. And yeah, I'm by the way, I always hit you up to be like, yeah, I saw you guys have that video out. Can I see it?
I'll hook you up, man. What do you need?
Yeah.
Hook me up. We'll
everything.
Talk after.
Everything.
All right. I'll hook you up, man. All right. Talk later, boss.
See you guys. Thank you.
Okay, so we're back in the virtual studio here. Jake being in LA and me being in New York. And yeah, Jake, that was a really fun shoot. I thought that it was just a really cool perspective, different than the jazz perspective. You know, it's this pop world where there's different requirements and it's a different scene. And I love that perspective. I love what he was talking about.
I didn't realize how thick he was involved in all that stuff since the last time we did a shoot with him. But man, he's been busy.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we talked about, you know, Asaf is an old friend, and it's great to see your friends doing well. And he's definitely always had a great work ethic and a great attitude, and he's always given it all to every gig he's ever done. So it's not surprising to me that he's doing well. It's actually just, it's encouraging. It's nice to see it, you know?
Yeah, and it was a little bit of a surprise to hear that, like, from a guitar player's perspective, the Kemper, the whole like Kemper thing is now industry standard, basically. Like, I was checking that out, and I was starting to drool. So I might have to grab me one of those.
How much they cost?
They're like, I saw one for like $1,800. So I think they're
that's nothing. Like, it's like a cup of coffee.
There. And I know there's another another company. I forget what they were, but. And for what you're getting, if you're getting consistency, like he was saying,
right,
as far as like in-ear monitors, just all that stuff making it so easy, then yeah, it makes sense. I mean, unless you're Derek Trucks or something like that,
right,
doing your own blues thing and that tone is like vintage and it's your own thing, then yeah. But if it's a pop gig like that, you just want it to be, mm-hmm. you know, on point, right. Badass.
Sound it has like to be
the,
dialed
sound
in.
Like the record. Yeah, and you can make that stuff sound like, you know, whatever's on the record.
Yeah, and I think it's just the kind of thing where when you're doing those pop gigs, you don't have a lot of time sometimes to set up if you're doing talk shows or
especially
even if you're
festivals.
In big stadiums. Yeah.
Quick changes with festivals are crazy.
Yeah. It's all about making it easy for the sound man or the sound woman to make you sound great. And so that was cool.
Yeah. Another cool thing was just the whole concept of like keeping up and learning more and more on whatever instrument you're on. I mean, if you're a bass player, you should be doing key bass by now. You should know how to deal with tracks. Always try to, if you can practice with a click, you know, you're gonna make a lot of drummers way more happy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is dependent upon what style you decide to play, but unless you know early on that you only want to play classical music or you only want to play jazz or you only want to play a certain style, it's not the wisest thing to ignore all these other things. If you do move to Los Angeles, you know, I've been in both Los Angeles and New York. It's a different scene. It's not as stereotypical as people say.
No.
It's not like all the people in LA suck and all the people in New York are rude.
You can get what you go look for, you know?
No, but, you know, in terms of, yeah, there are more pop gigs in LA. It's true. And, if that's what's required now, if you're a bass player and you know that you should play key bass, then do it. Learn how to do it. Figure it out.
Yeah, and I kept saying when I listened back to the podcast, I kept saying like, keep it fun. Like all this stuff should be fun. If it's honestly like the bane of your existence to have to learn something more or extra on your instrument, I mean, then maybe you shouldn't be doing this, because
right.
it's going to be a hell of a road, even if it is fun.
Yeah, that shouldn't be the case at all. And, you know, as far as singing background vocals, it's just really important. You know, it's something that I figured out when I was in Los Angeles, because when I was in New York, it really didn't matter. And then once I got to LA, everyone said, hey, you know, sing backgrounds on this, or can you sing, or can you sing? Seriously, every audition I did, if you didn't sing, it was a major, major minus.
If you need a place to practice that kind of thing, I mean, just link up with like a singer-songwriter, and they'll probably mm-hmm. need a guitar player, a bass player, a keyboard player. Just link up with them, even if you're just rehearsing and like practice. Because I found if you're doing backing vocals like on a stripped mm-hmm. down type of gig, that's really hard. So if you can do it right. there, then you're going to crush it on like a bandstand with like a full group. That's just gonna
yeah,
be awesome.
Just work hard on whatever you do. So yeah, once again, it's just an interesting point of view. And from a guy doing it in on a high level, and he's a music director, so he's telling you what he's looking for if you're interested in that kind of thing. And you know, it's always good to diversify your skills and just get a bigger arsenal. I hate that word because it always seems like war, but a tool set, skill set, whatever it is.
It's not a war, you know.
No, it's not a war. We're all friends here.
It is a war with friends, but.
All right. Well, anyway, that's it for now. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, performerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your heroes. Look forward to hearing from you.